Today's Minnesota Reads is made possible by the bookstore at Fitgers, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitgers on Superior Street, online at fitgersbookstore.com. This morning, our guest is the author of a book called How to Survive, The Extraordinary Resilience of Ordinary People. Andy Steiner joins us on the phone this morning. Hi, Andy.
Hi.
Nice to have you on the line with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
There's more and more talk about resilience. And the more the concept of resilience and the more that you learn about it, the more you think that it could hold the key to a lot of what troubles us and bothers us as people. What is this concept of resilience as we're coming to understand it?
Well, in my book, the way we look at resilience and the way I look at resilience is the idea or the ability to come back from something that's really traumatic and actually survive that. But I'm talking about survival, not like I climbed Mount Everest and I only had a sleeping bag and a bottle of water, but I lived through a really, you know, people I talk to lived through very traumatic life experiences, but then came out the other end and were able to continue living a life.
Resilience, too, can be, you're talking about really extreme cases of resilience, which is a wonderful, useful lesson, but resilience, too, can be kind of, if I'm understanding it right, the ability to roll with the punches more and not kick so hard against reality?
Yeah, I think that's true. But I should say that I don't think all of the people in my book are necessarily extreme. I think the point that I'm making in my book is that everybody has something that happens to them in their lives. And some of the people in my book have things like horribly traumatic things like losing a spouse or a child. But then there are people who've also had their house foreclosed upon or lost a job. You know, some everyday traumas, but really are very traumatic to the people at the moment that they're living through them.
Tell us a little bit about your process in putting this book together. And the one thing that you didn't really, well, you kind of alluded to, but you didn't really come out and say, was how come you wanted to write it in the first place?
That's a good question. Well, I'm a writer and a journalist, and I'm a really a naturally curious and, I have to say, empathetic person. I don't know if that's the right way of saying that, but I really feel other people's, I don't know, I'd like hear other people's stories, and I really feel their stories. The process for me was that I've been a journalist for a long time and had done a lot of different interviews with people who've had really traumatic things that have happened in their lives, but I've always been impressed just by the strength and how they got through that. So my process really had something a lot to do with just that. I was just really inspired by that. But then also while I was working on this book, I did suffer a couple of serious losses in my own life, and I write about that in the book. I had a niece who passed away and my father-in-law passed away. They both got sick and died very quickly. So that was part of it, too, my own sense of that. But I really feel like everyone has some trauma, either, or if they haven't, they will, and they will have come up with ways to sort of live through it.
One of the things that, especially if we are related in some way to the greatest generation, you don't hear a lot about resilience or about coping skills. You see it, but it's like that's the way it was. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no other way but to just go through. Do you think that our parents and grandparents were more resilient than we are now, or is that just kind of romanticizing the past?
I'm a youngest child of six, and I have parents from the greatest generation. I'm lucky. I have a 91-year-old father and an 88-year-old mother, and they have lived through a lot in their lives. And I interview people who are members of the greatest generation in my book and feature them, who talk about the different ways they sort of got through things. There's one thing about saying, for instance, in my How to Survive the Death of a Spouse, I think, the issue there is I interview a woman who is in her 90s now who, when her first husband died, she really just kind of said, I got to pull myself up by my bootstraps and a real greatest generation approach, and I'm going to take care of this, and I'm going to be okay. Then I talked to other people, younger people, also lost their spouses, and they had another approach to it, but they still had a similar kind of, we're going to do this, we have no choice. And I think those are the most resilient people, are the ones who can really say, I got to put one foot in front of the other. There's different ways of doing it, but it's still, they're still all valid.
The Institute of Healing of Memories, mm-hmm, is something also that you mentioned in this book. And that idea connected to me very strongly with something that we've been talking about on this program, and which is part of a bigger conversation, about the idea of historical trauma.
Yes.
Do you see that connection there, and how does that fit in to this idea of resilience?
Well, there definitely is, that's true, and the historical trauma, I think that the approach that Father Michael Lapsley has taken with the Institute of Healing of Memories in South Africa is really talking about a national resilience and a sense of how we as a, how they as a nation can come pull together and survive. I think that he talks about there are different options. In my book, Father Lapsley talks about you can be a stone in the river and do nothing to survive, just live, but not be resilient, and the water rushes around you. Or you have a choice. You can say, I'm going to do something about this and move on to the next part of my life. Incorporate this trauma into my life, and as a nation, he says, this is what we're going to do, and then we're going to, that's how we're going to be stronger as a nation.
You have a fascinating section in the book where you or the person that you interviewed talk about not defining people by focusing on their problems. You know, perhaps this child is developmentally disabled. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You focus instead on finding them strength and offering them hope and empowerment that way. This child is a very talented artist, for example. Right. Talk about that idea a little bit. That seems like it could change so many things in our lives.
There's a deficit model in social work, and I'm not an expert in social work, but so anyone who's a social worker will probably have a lot more to say about this. The person I talked to was talking about the whole perspective of when you do an intake interview with a person who you're working with, and you ask them, what are the bad things? Basically, you're saying, here are the list of the bad things that have happened to you. And you, by the time you get through that intake interview, you get people feeling really bad about themselves. You know, they feel like, yeah, my mother is an alcoholic. I was left here. I had to do this. And you don't come out of that experience feeling like I can take on the world. The perspective instead is to say, let's find what your inner strength is. Let's find where your natural resilience. You know, I work on that with my own children. I'm a parent, and, you know, sometimes my kids are having a hard time, and instead of saying, yeah, I know this stinks, I can say, let's use your strong inside, right, and pull yourself out here. Let's figure out what you can do to make things better for yourself.
Sometimes the temptation really is overwhelming to just sit down, cross your arms, and pout.
Right. Right, and I mean, there's nothing, I mean, my book isn't saying, you know, you have to do it this way, or this is the only right way to do this. Everybody has different approaches, but sometimes maybe pouting for a little while is okay, but then you have to move on. I mean, that's just, otherwise you're the stone, right, in the river, and the river is going to wash around you. So,
with all of the variety of stories in the book, one or more of the stories is bound to connect with anyone who reads it. And it's just a wonderful look at something that we just don't look at often enough.
You know what people say? This is interesting. I wrote a chapter about how to survive a heart attack. And in that chapter, I focused on one person, a young woman who had a heart attack. She was a marathoner. She didn't expect to have anything wrong with her. She was very healthy, careful with her diet. And then she had a heart attack, a real surprise. And then in the process of me interviewing her, she had another heart attack. It's amazing. But, you know, one thing she talked about is earlier in her life, she had a child with a premature baby who survived. But she remembered looking around at that time when her child was in the hospital and realizing everybody has something. We all have something that makes us vulnerable. What is it? You know, and how can we realize that about ourselves? And it's that one, that's that, the realization suddenly that, oh, I'm this delicate, you know, thread of life. It's scary, but it also can be empowering, and it can unify people too.
What a wonderful idea. Maybe folks could take a couple of minutes and instead of writing their issues, the things that trouble them or that they feel hamper them, write down all of the cool things about them.
Yeah, that's an interesting, that would be an interesting way of doing that. It's true. And you can realize, maybe in realizing that everybody has something, that we're all human, maybe that'll help us all feel like, okay, we're in this together. This is, you know, this is just how life works. It's something, though, you go when you're young, you don't think about it, really. You think we're all perfect. And then suddenly, as you get older, you suddenly realize, no, there's a lot of things out there. But that's what makes us beautiful. I talk about that at the end of my book. You know, I talk about the Velveteen Rabbit, and how the Velveteen Rabbit what really made him beautiful was the parts that were loved off. And that's sort of what happens to all of us.
Andy, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. It was great to talk with you.
Great to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Our book this week called How to Survive: The Extraordinary Resilience of Ordinary People. The author is Andy Steiner. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and also by the bookstore at Fitgers, a full-service book and toy store located on the bottom floor of Fitgers on Superior Street, online at fitgersbookstore.com.